National Book Award, but Lisi had given only one interview in her life. This was for the well-known women's magazine that publishes the column, "Yes, I'm Married to Him." She spent roughly half of its 500-word length explaining that her nickname rhymed with Cece. Most of the other half had to do with her recipe for slow-cooked roast beef. Lisi's sister Amanda said that the picture accompanying the interview made Lisi look fat. None of Lisi's sisters was immune to the pleasures of setting the cat among the pigeons. Stirring up a stink had been their father's phrase for it, or having a good natter about someone else's dirty laundry. But the only one Lisi had a hard time liking was this same Amanda. Eldest and oddest of the one-time Debusschere girls of Lisbon Falls, Amanda currently lived alone, in a house which Lisi had provided, a small, weathertight place not too far from Castleview, where Lisi, Darla, and Cantata could keep an eye on her. Lisi had bought it for her 7 years ago, five before Scott died. Died young. Died before his time, as the saying was. Lisi still had trouble believing he'd been gone for 2 years. It seemed both longer and the blink of an eye. When Lisi finally got around to making a start at cleaning out his office suite, a long and beautifully lit series of rooms that had once been no more than the loft above a country barn, Amanda had shown up on the third day, after Lisi had finished her inventory of all the foreign additions, there were hundreds, but before she could do more than start listing the furniture, with little stars next to the pieces she thought she ought to keep. She waited for Amanda to ask her why she wasn't moving faster, for heaven's sake, but Amanda asked no questions. While Lisi moved from the furniture question to a listless and day-long consideration of the cardboard boxes of correspondence stacked in the main closet, Amanda's focus seemed to remain on the impressive stacks and piles of memorabilia which ran the length of the study's south wall. She worked her way back and forth along this snake-like accretion, saying little or nothing, but jotting frequently in a little notebook she kept near to hand. What Lisi didn't say was, "What are you looking for? Or what are you writing down?" As Scott had pointed out on more than one occasion, Lisi had what was surely among the rarest of human talents. She was a business minder who did not mind too much if you didn't mind yours. As long as you weren't making explosives to throw at somebody, that was. And in Amanda's case, explosives were always a possibility. She was the sort of woman who couldn't help prying, the sort of woman who would open her mouth sooner or later. Her husband had headed south from Rumford, where they had been living, like a couple of wolverines caught in a drainpipe, Scott said after an afternoon visit he vowed never to repeat, in 1985. Her one child, named Intermezzo and called Metzi for short, had gone north to Canada, with a long-haul trucker for a beau, in 1989. One flew north, one flew south, one couldn't shut her everlasting mouth. That had been their father's rhyme when they were kids. And the one of Dandy Dave Debusschere's girls who never could shut her everlasting mouth was surely Manda, dumped first by her husband and then by her own daughter. Hard to like as Amanda sometimes was, Lisi hadn't wanted her down there in Rumford on her own. Didn't trust her on her own, if it came to that. And although they'd never said so aloud, Lisi was sure Darla and Cantata felt the same. So she'd had a talk with Scott, and found the little Cape Cod, which could be had for $97,000 cash on the nail. Amanda had moved up within easy checking range soon after. Now Scott was dead, and Lisi had finally gotten around to the business of cleaning out his writing quarters. Halfway through the fourth day, the foreign editions were boxed up, the correspondence was marked and in some sort of order, and she had a good idea of what furniture was going and what was staying. So why did it feel like she had done so little? She'd known from the outset that this was a job which couldn't be hurried. Never mind all the importuning letters and phone calls she'd gotten since Scott's death, and more than a few visits, too. She supposed that in the end, the people who were interested in Scott's unpublished writing would get what they wanted, but not until she was ready to give it to them. They hadn't been clear on that at first. They weren't down with it, as the saying was. Now she thought most of them were. There were lots of words for the stuff Scott had left behind,